Hi, I'm Megan.
And I'm Sarah.
We're two moms with eight kids between us from preschool to teen.
This is the show where we help you feel better about the mom you are and share our own parenting tips and personal stories.
We're not experts. We're parents who've been there.
We're not perfect. We're real. Welcome to the Mom Hour. Hey, everyone, and welcome to episode 165 of the Mom Hour. I am Sarah Powers, here as always with Megan Francis. Hi, Megan.
Hey, Sarah. Excited about this topic today.
It is a really good one. We're going to talk about feeling criticized, feeling judged, yeah. Which is like a ginormous topic.
It really is. I feel like this could be like a whole season.
It could. You know, this is sort of a through line of our show. A lot of moms say they listen to our show because we're non-judgmental, or we kind of make it okay to you do you no matter what you're doing. And that's the culture we've tried to create. But at the same time, we don't have a lot of episodes. Actually, we have a couple, but way back in the archives, that are actually devoted to this idea of judgment and criticism, and more how we react to it as moms. I don't think we can ever stop it existing in the world, but maybe managing our own reactions.
Absolutely. Love it. So we're going to offer our perspectives on feeling criticized, which is not always the same as getting or being criticized, right. Which is definitely something I think we're both going to hit on. But I know it's just going to happen sometimes. But if you kind of flip the script and come at it from a different angle, I know that's helped me a lot in my motherhood journey, and hopefully will help you too.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm excited for this. Also wanted to mention that we have Katie Addis at the end of the show, who comes on with me once a month. And she's got always great tips, great discoveries. And she's also really honest about, you know, what life is like with, now she has two toddlers. I used to say a baby and a toddler, but she's got a 1 and 3 year old. So she's in the thick of it. So listen all the way to the end and you will hear Katie and me. So that'll be fun.
Well, let's start with our sponsor, Canvas People. This is one of my favorite sponsors, honestly, because I think over the last, like, I'm going to say 10 years, we've all gotten so much better at taking pictures.
Yeah.
Because we carry around these great cameras that are attached to our communication devices, right?
And the cameras keep getting better.
They keep getting better and better. So I have beautiful photos I've taken of my kids over the years. What I have not gotten better at, or have gotten much worse at, is actually printing those photos, which means I never display those photos. Right. So I have so many photos that are just like, basically, unless I scroll back to the beginning of smartphone history, that are just lost to time. And that makes me really, really sad. So what I love about Canvas People is they take those photos of yours, those really, you know, those ones you grab after you've been like at the beach or whatever it is, and you grab that photo that you feel so good about, and they make these beautiful prints of them on Canvas. And it is truly a work of art, because not only is it, it's just more interesting to look at a canvas print, I think, than a framed photo.
Yes.
But they're big, and it's just a great way to, if you're looking for something to hang on a wall, we always say, like, if you can't get a room to feel like it has some personality, get something and hang it on the wall.
Yeah.
And Canvas People is a great way to do that, because they really are like pieces of art. So this is a fantastic offer. We have a special code you can use to get 11 by 14 Canvas People print for free. That is a $69.99 value, so $70 value. And all you have to do is pay the shipping and handling.
That's amazing.
Again, it's a huge print. I got mine, and it's nice sized. So just go to canvaspeople.com. Upload your photo and enter the special code MOMHOUR. So again, this is a limited time offer. You're going to want to check it out. Go to canvaspeople.com and use the code MOMHOUR, and you're going to get that 11 by 14 print for free if you just pay the shipping and handling.
This is such good timing too, because I feel like we've done quite a bit this summer with my kids, and sometimes I take a really great picture. Of course, I post it to Instagram because hello, but then I forget about it. And pretty soon the summer's over. We're going to go back to school. So I love that this is a way to just get it off the phone and onto the wall for free, guys. This is such a good deal. Love it. Okay. So guys, the way we've kind of structured this is we're going to go back and forth, Megan, and we're going to offer different ways to think about. So I'm calling this, when you feel criticized, remember this. So these are kind of core things you can remember, or perspective to have when you feel judged, criticized, shamed as part of motherhood. So I'll go first, Megan, if that's cool with you.
Yeah, go ahead.
And so my first thing to remember when you feel criticized is it's okay to feel sad. It's okay to feel mad. I feel like I'm talking to a toddler.
This sounds like a Dr. Seuss book.
It is. It
or is. Or Mr. Rogers.
It's what we say to our kids when they're having big emotions. But I think as moms, sometimes we skip those feelings and we get right to the part where we're like saying, oh, I'm too sensitive. I shouldn't be taking this so hard. Or we kind of are our defensiveness goes up and we're like, well, I don't care what that person thinks anyway. And so we kind of skip over the real feelings of it hurts to feel judged or criticized, and it can make you mad. And I think just like we say to our kids, it's really important to take time to acknowledge those feelings. And I don't mean like you have to write a poem about it or like have a whole therapy session. I just mean that what we resist is what kind of persists. And I didn't make that up, but you know, it helps my kid who ruminates on things. So, you know, take a minute to like really recognize sad and mad feelings before you try to move on and rationalize and, you know, do all these other great tips that I'm sure we'll have for you today.
Yeah, I was actually just going to say that like every time I try to suppress what I'm feeling and tell myself that I'm taking something too seriously, I get more defensive.
Yeah.
Like, it's like because me telling myself I have no right to feel a certain way then makes me almost feel that feeling harder.
It's weird, or it goes into kind of like a beating yourself up for even having the feelings in the first place, which we all do that, but it's not healthy. And you know, the good coaches and therapists will tell you that like there's no feelings that are wrong. Feelings are just feelings. So if it's still, I think, great to examine maybe why you feel that way or why you're particularly sensitive in that area. And that's something I think we're going to get into later in the episode. But just feel the feels, I guess, is my first kind of tip.
Allow yourself to feel your feels. That's a great tip. Okay, ready for me to go?
Yeah.
Okay. So my first one is that everyone, literally everybody, and I mean it literally, not literally figuratively, feels judged at some point in some way of their lives. So that includes the mom who seems to have like the most perfect life. That includes the mom who's been doing this a long time, like me. Every single new phase of motherhood has opened up like a new opportunity for me to doubt myself. Mm-hmm. And that often leads to projecting other people's opinions onto what I feel about my own opinions or my assumptions about their opinions. So I just think there's really nobody out there who hasn't felt this and who isn't feeling it right now. Mm-hmm. Like everybody is. And that includes the moms who are maybe judging. That's, you know,
especially
like,
maybe.
Yes, especially. And not only has everyone felt judged, I'm going to go on a limb and say everybody has judged, even if they didn't mean to. Or didn't dwell on it or didn't make it apparent. It's a part of the human experience. Mm-hmm. And I do think that, you know, speaking of projecting, the times of my life that I have felt the most judged have also been the times I've been doing the most judging. Mm. And it's kind of a chicken or egg thing. Like it's hard to say where it started and where it stopped, but it's like that vicious cycle of once you're judging, you're in that judging mindset. So you're more susceptible to being judged. And on the other side, I feel like the more time you spend thinking about or fixating on the fact that maybe someone else is judging you, the more you kind of want to lash out defensively to judge them back. So wherever you fall right now in the cycle, like I'm picturing in my head one of those circles with like the arrow.
Yeah.
Where it's like on the left is like judging. And then like right around noon, it's like, or 12 o'clock, it's like judged, you know, and it just goes round and round. And sometimes it's really hard to get off that train, but you can't stop other people from judging you. The only thing you have power over is how you react to it and then how you internalize and interpret your feelings about whatever they're doing.
Okay, I'm going to ask you a couple questions to go deeper with this one because this is like a big one that I don't want to gloss over. First of all, because not all of our listeners know your backstory, can you maybe give an example of a period of, I think I know what you'll say, but a period of time where you were in this judgy cycle and maybe what the circumstances were?
Sure. Okay. So this was like early interwebs. It was around late 90s. And, you know, when I had Jacob, I was fairly crunchy, but I didn't know that that was a thing. Like, I just didn't know that, you know, taking your baby to bed with you and like kind of attachment parenting practices were like a thing that you could find on the internet.
Oh, yes.
I like to say I fell in with a group of like a militant crunchy group. And at first it just seemed like all of this like treasure trove of information and like these new ways of doing things. And for a short period of time, I actually felt like I found a comfortable home and I felt less defensive about my choices because I had this group of people that were doing things similar ways that I was.
And it was probably a great buffer against maybe judgment you'd have from the real outside world.
Exactly. That's exactly what I mean.
Who maybe didn't support extended breastfeeding or cloth diapering or whatever. Yeah. So I can see how that would happen.
So it was like this you know, comfy little haven for a while where I could just kind of be me and like talk openly about the things that I was doing and, you know, just lots of different things that I was immersed in at that time. And I think sometime around the time I had Isaac was when I kind of fell overboard. And that was when it wasn't enough for me to, you know, get some validation on a choice or get some information I might not have gotten elsewhere and then feel good about my choices because people were supporting me. It became almost more like, now what more can I do? Like, what more can I do to fit this group, to fit in with this group? And the group had a really judgy overtone or undertone, whichever one, that was not always apparent, but would kind of, like, if you were just like kind of looking in from the outside, you didn't always see it right away. And then it would flare up in these most like epic of internet battles. And this was back in the bulletin board days. And I got like to a point where I would judge people only because I knew I was being like judged, or that's the way I would, you know, that's where the cycle started for me. Like, I knew if I didn't do X, this group of people would judge me for it. Therefore, if anyone else didn't do Y and I did do Y, that gave me license to judge them. And it was very insidious the way it snuck in. I didn't even see it coming. And I basically had to, I mean, I would say around the time William was born was when I kind of just divorced myself from, I'm still actually friends with a lot of these people, but the group dynamics were like a no-go for me. And that was because, you know, I had three kids all of a sudden and I was working and there were things that there's choices I had to make and things I had to do just to get by. And I really literally did not have time to worry about what anybody else thought.
I love that. I think the third kid for both of us is when we're like, well, I don't have time to worry about that anymore.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
But I want to
one other thing. And I will say also being a single mom for a while at that early stage when Jacob was like four and Isaac was two was another big moment for me where I was like, I need people's help and support in real life. I don't have time to worry about what these internet people think of me. And that was, it's so funny looking back now that was ever a thing because I'm so much more confident now and stuff, but everybody goes through, like everyone in some way has to get there.
And even though we're talking about almost 20 years ago in internet life, Facebook groups are all the rage right now with new moms. And so it can't be that much different. I think I think the best Facebook groups are well moderated and have some kind of core values in place, but this stuff is still happening. And so the two things that came up for me when you were talking is number one, whenever you have a group of people sort of committed to a collection of values or a lifestyle, well, it could be anything. And we see this in our political climate. We see it all over the place. It's just way too easy to be lazy and like you're either in or out. And if you're in, you do all of the things on this
menu. The whole
menu.
Laundry
you
list.
You do all of it. Like all, here's your attachment parenting checklist or your whatever it is checklist. And then if you don't do those things, you are riddled with self-doubt and, you know, risk being ostracized. This is how this like tribe dynamic works. Now, I think, like you said, there could be real value in finding your people who have a similar mindset. So it's really tricky to kind of figure out where does this become sort of mom shaming or judginess and where is it a supportive community? And I think when you're a new mom, it's just really hard to know because like you said, you feel validated by having a group of like-minded people. So I don't know. I just think it's really important. If you have found a tight-knit group, I would just say to be aware of what things feel supportive and what things feel sort of exclusive or like, what am I trying to say? Like deal breakers, like you're in or you're out.
And if your gut tells you people are being abusive, it's because they are. I mean, that's the other thing. Like if you feel like it's a cult or like you don't get to be yourself because you don't get to express an opinion that differs from them, it's bad. Get out. Like that's the only thing I could, you know, that would be like, I wish I had done that a year before I did.
Yeah. I remember this conversation with a mom I didn't know very well. She was like the wife of someone that was hanging out with my husband and they were visiting from the Boston area where there was a plethora of natural parenting and crunchy communities and resources. And I remember saying to her that in Arizona, where I was at the time, I felt pretty crunchy and I'm not really that crunchy, but I breastfed longer than a year. Just certain little things. And, I remember saying to her, like, it's a little lonely sometimes because I feel like, you know, there's not a lot of people interested in some of the parenting things I'm interested in. And she said, well, you might just want to be thankful for what you have, because let me tell you what kind of a competitive, it's like a competitive sport. And I'm sure that's kind of similar to what you experienced too. And I had never thought about it. I just thought, well, wouldn't that be great to be surrounded by people who are baby wearing and this and that? And she was like, well, but maybe not.
Sometimes it's not so bad to be like the kind of, you know, somewhat quirky outsider.
Yes. I think there's some advantages.
I think there's advantages to that over being like the person who's lagging behind the group of quirky people who have become the norm. And because there is there's a lot of temptation to push it, push it. And I remember, you know, reading stories about like birth experiences, and it was almost like the weirder things went. And I'm using weird as totally without judgment because, or with judgment. I don't even know. I mean, I had home births and I did some fairly weird things on that would be considered weird to like a typical hospital birth person. But to me, like my perspective is so different that like to me, they're just like basically like home birth light.
Yeah.
But there were people, you know, doing things like skirting the edges, the extremes. And like you almost, it would become kind of addictive, like reading these stories and being like, how much weirder will this birth be than the last one? How long is she going to carry the placenta around or whatever it is? And you get to the point where you start to really lose perspective about how many people don't do these things.
Like
it's a pretty limited group of people. So it can start to feel a lot bigger than it actually is.
Yes. Yes. And I think we've said in the show before that it takes a while to realize you can cherry pick. And it's just so when you're brand new, it just feels like once you're on a bus, whether it's the attachment parenting bus or the working mom bus or whatever, then you're like on it and it's moving and you're doing what everybody else on the bus is doing. And it just takes time to realize you truly can. It's a buffet. You can cherry pick.
Yep. Yep.
So I don't know. I felt like that was worth a little deeper.
No, I totally agree. I do agree. Okay, is it your turn?
Yeah, it's my turn. But this is funny because I wrote it up and I'm totally just going to like quote you back at yourself because you wrote a really great post. I looked it up. It was in 2012, which is not as old as some of the things.
It's a long time ago, though.
6 years ago. And so what I want to say about what to remember when you feel criticized is it's always worth examining why we feel particularly vulnerable or sensitive about certain things. And I'm not saying that it's all about you and the person didn't mean it. And so sometimes people just are mean and judgy. So I want to say that first of all. But if you find yourself continually feeling sensitive or criticized in a particular area, I think it's really interesting to look at why that might be and just recognize that you have what you called it in the post, Megan, was your parenting Achilles heel. And I'll link up the post in the show notes. But basically, you talked about having kind of gotten a reputation as a teenager of someone who's flaky or irresponsible, for better or for worse.
Yeah.
And that stayed with you into motherhood. So anytime something came up that could appear that you didn't have your you-know-what together, you were defensive before anyone even criticized. And I totally relate to that, not about that. In fact, sometimes I relate to that as the opposite. Like I have a reputation for being uptight. So anytime I am given a chance to like prove that I'm not, or that if I feel like I'm being accused of being uptight, then I go overboard. You know, it's the same thing. So figure that out, just whether it's through like journaling or just, I don't know, self-examination. Because, and the reason I think it's worth looking at is if you're continuing to get your feelings hurt over a pretty similar theme, it can just be helpful to say, okay, this is me reacting to this particular thing. And while that person might have been a little rude, I'm bringing a whole like suitcase full of baggage to this. And maybe we can separate those two things and the hurt doesn't sting quite as much. Does that make sense?
Yeah, no, totally. I had forgotten about that post and then I went and looked at it and I forgot that it was, this is like funny how time softens things or time makes things seem like, why did I worry about that so much? I had completely forgotten that Clara's top two teeth were really decayed. They came in early and were never really good. And I took her to a dentist when she was a baby, like under a year old. And he told me, you know, sometimes it just happens. They came in early. The enamel didn't develop right. Not your fault, but we don't want to pull them until she's three. So she walked around for 2 years with like really bad front teeth. And I felt terrible about it. Like for 2 years, like she had the most adorable little baby smile. And then I felt bad because I felt like people would be looking at me thinking I didn't brush my kids' teeth.
You gave her Coke in bottles.
Like I gave her Coke in bottles and then like, yeah. So it's, or like a pacifier dipped in sugar. Remember people talking about that from like the olden days. But anyway, I just look back now and of course I understand why I felt that way. Like she was an extension of me. She was everywhere I went. I had this baby and then toddler, you know, on my hip.
Yeah.
And people looked at her and she had that big smile and like, And, you know, people would be like, what's wrong with her teeth? Like, I remember multiple people asking, and like, you don't really want to get into, well, you know, they came in at 2 months and
yeah,
just, you know, and they didn't have a sufficient enamel. If you'd like to speak to my pediatric dentist, right, his number is here.
Yeah.
He's really great about returning calls. And I promise you, I'm seeing him every 6 months. I mean, like,
yeah,
you feel like you have to go into this big explanation. And then when she was three, they got pulled out and it was never a thing again. Like,
yeah,
well, except then everyone thought they just got punched out or something. So I still got tons of comments after they were removed, but right, I would just go, yep, they got pulled, and then move on. But it's just funny how now that's like, I'd forgotten about that because yeah, it's so not a factor anymore, yeah, which I think is when you're feeling judged, just remember, like, in 2 years, you probably won't even remember what you felt judged about in the first place.
Yeah.
So
yeah, yeah, no, absolutely. Yeah, I don't know. I'm sure our listeners can relate to having those specific areas that feel more just tender than others.
Yeah, so of course.
Just, yep, just helpful to know what they are. Okay, let's take a quick break and talk about our sponsor, Hydrolite. I'm excited about this one. So a few weeks ago, my family got hit with a summer stomach bug, which just seems like adding insult to injury.
It's so mean.
It's so mean, world. But I'm really happy to have found out about Hydrolite. I wasn't familiar with it before, but it's a great tasting clinical hydration product that has all the right balance of sodium, glucose, and water to replace those fluids and electrolytes that you lose when you're sick or if you're running around like crazy. But what it doesn't have is all the extra sugar that we yeah, know comes in the popular sports drinks. So they have great flavors like orange and berry and lemonade. And what's cool is you can get it as a pre-mixed drink in a bottle, just like you would get a sports drink, but also a powder or these little effervescent tablets you can drop into a glass of water. And those are great for travel, for on the go, for, you know, sports tournaments. It is hot right now where both you and I are. And I don't know, do you notice when your kids are dehydrated? I do. Like, I can just...
Oh, yeah. They get grumpy. They get headaches. Yeah.
Yes.
Yep.
So staying ahead of hydration is super important, whether it's just sickness or summer or whatever. So Hydrolite's available in the digestive aisle at Rite Aid or online at Amazon. And so if you guys head to hydrolite.com/podcasts, that will take you actually to their Amazon store. And it's 30% off if you use the promo code HydraKid. I went through and made sure all that worked. Again, it's hydrolite.com/podcasts. And then that saves you 30% off their Amazon store when you use the promo code HydraKid. The promo code happens kind of like when you set up your payment information. It's yeah, it's through their Amazon store. So there is a place for that promo code to save 30%. So go check that out, Hydrolite.
I love the tablets. You can yeah, throw them in your beach bag or your purse or in a drawer in the kitchen. Very convenient.
Totally.
Okay, so should we get back to
yeah,
judgment?
Uh-huh.
Okay, I guess it's my turn to go now.
Yeah.
Okay. So keeping, you know, things to keep in mind when you're feeling judged. And this is another time I'm going to make a grandiose statement. You ready?
Ready? Do we need music?
I kind of feel like we do. We need to have Johnny add some grandiose music here. I have literally never. Now, again, I mean that literally.
Yep.
Made a good parenting decision based on what someone else thought. Or I'm going to put this forward again, what I thought they thought, because I do think sometimes perception of what other people think about you and reality are not the same, and it's not always easy to sort out. But like, that's probably the number one thing. Like, is someone judging you? Ask yourself, wait, are they really judging you? Yes. Or are you just feeling judged because you're sensitive, like yes, you said before? So this is a hard one, though, because we are social creatures. Mm-hmm. Like, there's a reason we hang together in packs. And there's a reason that we take advice from the people who are close to us
yeah,
and want to make choices that other people support. I mean, that those are all important parts of living in a society or a tribe. But when it really comes down to it, once I've made up my mind, like, where I'm going, why I'm doing what I do, what path I'm on, etc., if I step off it to make someone else happy, I am not going to be happier as yeah, a result. And I'm not going to be a better parent as a result. So I guess the first step to that is doing the thinking and the like intention setting to mm-hmm, begin with, like knowing what kind of parent you are and understanding yourself and understanding where the balance lies between making yourself happy and functional and, you know, filling your own bucket and what kind of parent you would like to be mm-hmm, in an ideal world and then in the real world. I mean, there's a lot of like kind of thinking that has to go into that
yeah,
and soul searching. But I feel like the more we kind of focus on what kind of parent we want to be and why we're doing what we do, why we're in this whole like mothering thing in the first place. Why are we here? You know, we're all here to some degree by choice.
Yeah.
So why? What is it about having kids that, you know, why do we do it in the first place?
Yeah.
And when you really look at it from that like big picture perspective, it makes it easier. I won't say easier, but easier to stick to your guns about stuff and to not get derailed. And I mean, again, it's like getting confident in your parenting takes action. It takes making the choices that you want to make over and over and over.
Yes.
And it's like flexing a muscle.
Yes.
Like the more you practice, the easier it gets. Sometimes you have to fake it till you make it. And that's that muscle becomes stronger and stronger. But sometimes the weight feels heavier than other times. Yeah.
Well, I had two things to say, and one of them was related to that. And that is to just practice. That I feel like I'm in kind of a fun stage right now where, you know, I'm past the really hard baby stage, but we're not into teenage years yet. And I almost get a kick out of now just deciding that I want to do things a little differently than someone else around me or than the, you know, mainstream parenting culture, and just declaring it and doing it. And it feels good, but it takes a long time to get there. So as much little practice as you can have about taking those stands, little, big, whatever, and sticking to them no matter what, it is at flexing a muscle. So I was going to say that. But also another thing that I think makes this really hard is like the quantity of information available. Because if you really truly are on the fence about a decision, like let's say you have a baby that's on the smaller side and you are hearing from all different sides about whether or not to supplement with formula. I'm just making that up. That's not one from my experience, but I know it's a common one. You can find arguments for and against and in the middle, like like forever. You could go down like the never-ending rabbit hole and never get closer to a decision what's right for you. So, I mean, intuition and, you know, kind of looking inside is helpful, but also what's helpful, especially when you're brand new, is finding a very short list of people you trust. And that could include on medical issues, it's going to include your pediatrician, your healthcare provider, your whatever it is, but
don't listen to us for that stuff.
Yeah. It should be a short list, honestly.
Yeah.
Because then I feel like, and I'm more of an authority seeking person. I like rules and I like someone to tell me what the right thing is. So when you're in those more uncertain times, it might be false. I mean, no one pediatrician is the world's best pediatrician either. They're all flawed and they all have their own biases. But if you sort of declare your short list of trusted advisors and then really lean on them and go with their recommendations as well as your own gut, then you can tune out the rest. And I think it's really hard to make a quote unquote like good decision when there's so much available information. It's so hard.
Yeah, I totally agree. And I know you've probably I went the route where I read everything there was to read about different parenting, you know, choices and pregnancy and all that stuff for like the first 2 or 3 years. And then I basically kind of stopped for a couple of reasons. A, I don't think things have changed
right
since then. Like I got all the information I need.
I'm good.
I talk to well-informed people.
Yeah.
And that's another really good way to get information. Of course, you don't just want to take hearsay, but like if you are hearing things coming from a friend who's really good at filtering and then you can decide what's worth reading an article about, I think that that can really help, you know, calm that information overload feeling. And also I felt like I got to a place where I wasn't going to read any one more piece of data. I had already by that point gone through data cycles where I had witnessed in front of my eyes.
Yeah.
Opinions, medical opinions, data-driven opinions changing in front of my eyes. And I think I just became a little skeptical that it was ever going to change in a way that I'd feel any more confident about.
Right.
Everything from feeding, and we were just talking about this, you know, pretty recently, like how feeding recommendations have probably changed 3 or 4, maybe 5 times since I started having kids. So the doctors today aren't any smarter than the doctors 20 years ago. They might have access to better research, but that's not necessarily the case. The research could be affected by things I don't truly understand. And I think it's just like, it becomes that sort of, how much information do I need to make the best decision I can without second guessing literally everything I do.
Can I ask another, yeah, or let's talk about this a little, since we ended up in this place of like research and data driven stuff. One thing I find is tricky is so let's say you have made a decision about feeding your baby a certain way. Sometimes even just communicating that decision in casual conversation, forget about feeling judged for a second. Right. It almost can feel like you're the one judging, because if you have taken a stand a certain way, even if you're just like, oh, this is what we're doing, the implication, or it feels like the other person could feel like, well, are you better than me? Like, are you, you know? So I don't know if you remember that, of being on the flip side of like not wanting other people to feel like you're judging them. I know I have felt that with a couple of things in particular where I'm like, oh, well, this is just how we do it. But no judgment, like you do. Again, I really do have no judgment, but that's hard because you kind of feel like if you're making a decision, then it's easier for others to infer that.
Yeah. Well,
valid. Yeah.
Two point parts to that answer, I guess. One is I decided early on the least said the better about any of it.
Yeah.
I don't share birth stories with people I don't know very well. That is a trap. And I know that sounds terrible, but like, I feel like there's kind of no way for me to describe the births that I had without coming off, especially if I'm talking to people who had very, very different births. Like, mm-hmm. I know in a lot of ways I was lucky that nothing, you know, that I had really healthy pregnancies and easy births. And that's not something I can easily, I don't know, kind of explain away.
Yeah.
And then I don't want anyone to feel like they have to justify to me. So if someone starts telling me their story about, for example, how they had an emergency cesarean under super like scary circumstances because their doctor said their baby's head was way too big to ever come out, I in my gut feel like that's probably horse pucky. Like, mm-hmm. their baby's head probably was not so big that they could not ever get it out. But I don't know the circumstances that led to that.
Yeah.
And I would literally never share anything about my birth in that circumstance unless someone totally like asked me
point blank. Yeah.
Like, and because I don't want to come off as glib. I don't want to come off as judging. I don't want to come off as thinking I know better than their doctor. And I know there's like a lot of complicated things that lead to any one circumstance. So I just don't, don't talk about it. Now, when I do, if it comes up like in a group of friends or if I'm the one who talks about it first, because sometimes stuff like that just comes up and there's nothing you can do about it. I've just kind of decided like I can't really take responsibility for the way someone else feels about my experience. I can only talk about my experience in the most general, offhand, casual possible way or experience or choice. Like, I probably honestly wouldn't even use the phrase, this is how we do things.
Right.
Because I feel like there's inherent implied judgment there, even though it's never meant. Like, you could hear that and be like, what do you mean this is how we do things?
Right.
So you know what I mean?
Right.
So I don't even talk about it. I don't talk about that stuff. And maybe that's not the right thing. Like maybe I'm being kind of wimpy about it, but I just have so many years under my belt now of seeing how it plays out on both sides that I just want to get to know people for who they are.
Yeah.
Not for how they feed their babies or diaper their babies or
and
birth
I think
their babies.
What you and I can both attest to is like those first decisions are so upfront and in your face. I mean, the way you feed and diaper your baby is on public display a lot of the time. So it's right there, as well as, you know, how you're choosing to deal with behavior issues or discipline. It's so public. Birth isn't necessarily. I mean, you would have to tell your birth stories, but I feel like that goes away after like 3 or 4 years.
That's such a good point.
So like everyone's back on the same playing field. And like, if you got to know someone really well, or you were swapping old war stories, you could elect to go into a discussion of what breastfeeding was like for you, or why you chose formula, or why you had a home birth or whatever. But you would be opting into that conversation in most cases, as opposed to just having it right out there for the world to see. So let's file that one also into like, it just gets easier as you go.
Yeah,
I think.
Yeah. And I will also say, you know, and the breastfeeding and formula feeding is probably, I mean, of all the public parenting things, when you're in your most vulnerable, that is probably it, right? Yep. Like, if you're breastfeeding your kids around people who don't ever want to see an errant nipple, you feel uncomfortable. If you're formula feeding and you're out in public, you have no idea what people think about formula feeding, and it's easy to feel really judged. And actually, Jacob was formula fed, at least supplemented, and for the, you know, after probably 3 or 4 months. And then after that was pretty much exclusively formula fed after like 6 months. So I did not extended nurse him. Mm-hmm. And there were a lot of reasons that led to that, which are irrelevant and don't matter. But I do remember that feeling like I should have a sign on me.
Yeah.
That's like, I tried, promise, yep. Or like, get out of my face and leave me alone, even before someone had even looked at me or said anything. And yeah. And I think now it's so funny that like nothing I do, everything I do now is kind of behind closed doors almost. Right. Like it, no one really knows. And it,
right.
It's so in everyone's face when your babies are little.
Yeah.
Like up to, I would say like 3 or 4.
Yeah. That was the age that came to mind for me. Too.
Yeah. I mean, if they're not potty trained yet, people can tell they're in diapers. If they still have a pacifier, people can see it. Depending on what kind of discipline you use, that's going to play out in public.
Yep.
Like it really doesn't become until later that those become more private. And let me also say there's on the flip side of that, there is a loneliness to having older kids and having everything be so private. So there's not necessarily like one phase that's better or worse. I just think when it comes to being judged for like a snap decision, if you are a new mom or like up to 3 or 4, you are in the thick of it and it will get better.
Yep. And I think our listeners are probably already doing this so well, but you can remember your first tip from today, Megan, which is everyone is feeling judged.
Yeah.
But number two, you might be seeing someone on their best day or their worst day, and you have no idea where they are along that continuum. So yeah, the same grace we would want for ourselves could probably be applied in most cases. Okay, I think we should move on to my next one.
Okay.
Which I am going to start with a quote from The Music Man, which is actually like a quote from a proverb. And that is that friends, the idle brain is the devil's playground. Trouble. So what I mean by this is in the first couple of years, especially, it's easy for all this stuff that you feel judged about to become kind of your whole world. So let's say we're talking about sleep training or not sleep training. Let's say we're talking about the issue of, you know, co-sleeping or letting your baby cry it out or something in between. If you are already struggling with that decision and you're feeling a little bit judged by your peers, and then you're spending pretty much all of your free time reading blog posts about it, books about it, doing research about it, talking to your partner, your spouse about it.
Yeah.
And if I sound like I know what I'm talking about, it's quite possibly
because
I've done this. Then that is like, that has now like taken up all the available space in your brain, which makes any offhand comment about sleep by another mom, even if it's not meant at all toward you or at all judgmentally, it's like right there on the surface for you. So you can't help but not take it personally or send you into some spiral where you're questioning your every decision.
You've basically created a soup.
Yes.
Like a primordial soup where you're growing like fungal spores that are just waiting.
Right. So, and so even though, there might be a judgmental comment out there or a mom who disagrees, but you're going to be so primed to see it that you're going to be seeing, it's like the carpenter thinks the hammer's a solution for everything, right? Like you're going to see sleep everywhere you look. So the alternative to that is to make sure that you're filling your brain and your mind and your life with things outside of motherhood. And I didn't take this advice very well. I'm giving this advice to I was not very good at this. I'm better about it now. But if you have, you know, a good book that you're reading, a good TV show that you're watching, plans with friends to talk about stuff that's not kids, plans with friends who don't have kids, exercise, hobbies, like we talk about this stuff all the time. The more balanced your media intake is and just your activity balance is, the less those little comments are going to feel like they were like directed laserly at you.
Yes.
Does that make sense?
So I totally
I don't want to say like get a life, but kind of in a loving way, make sure that you are getting a life or at least on the path to getting a life outside of these baby issues.
Well, that actually leads up perfectly to my last thing to remember, which is kind of I guess backing up and just looking at this all from the bird's view. In my first tip, I think I referenced the cycle, like the judgment cycle.
Yeah.
And how whether you're judging or feeling judged, the first step is getting off the cycle. Like if you don't step off, you know, the roller coaster, it's just going to keep going around and around with you in it. So the question is, how do you do that? And you just said it, like get a life.
Yeah.
And create a life. And so I think both the non-parenting stuff, so the stuff that fills your brain with energy and data that's not about parenting. And that's like a really important piece of it, but also like just creating a life that feels good for you. So again, like looking with intention at the way you really want to do things, not the way you think other people would want you to do things, but the way you, you and maybe to some degree your partner, unless you're totally not seeing eye to eye on those things, in which case maybe have your own and he can have his. But just create that life that feels good for you, because really the more time and energy you're expending toward making something great. That feels really good. And then enjoying that life, then the less time and like literally, again, gosh, I'm using that word a lot, but I'm meaning it in only the most literal sense. The less time and energy you'll have to worry about what other people think.
Yeah.
It's assuming like assuming they even think what you think they're thinking.
Right. Exactly. Which is questionable. I have this mental image of like a force field barrier, like that intentional creating a life that feels good for you both inside and outside of parenting is like a little, like a glowing shield. It doesn't mean that the judgment and the criticism won't get to you, and you get to feel sad and mad, as we discussed, when somebody really makes a nasty comment or you fall in with a militant group of parents.
Crunchies.
So we're not saying those things aren't real or that you won't feel them, but I feel like that sort of buffer shield is strengthened by having this rich life of a bunch of different things that make you happy and float your boat. So that's really hard in the early years. It's really, really hard.
But you know what I think is another good analogy, if we're doing, you know, metaphors and analogies, is the one about putting the big rocks in first. So I'm sure you've heard, like, if you have a jar and you want to fill it with rocks, you got to put in the big rocks first, because if you put all the little stuff, and I count people's opinions about your parenting as a little rock. Maybe it's something to think about, but it's definitely not a priority. If you start throwing the little rocks in the jar, they're going to take up a lot of space and you won't have room for the big rocks. You don't have room for the stuff that matters. But if you put the big rocks in first, and that's how you feel about yourself as a mom, self-care, you know, having that life outside of just thinking about mom stuff all the time and prioritizing, then you can kind of sprinkle the little rocks in.
I love that. And it reminds me that we've talked about this too, that you don't have to, not every issue has to be a big rock for you. That was like a big realization, I think, for both you and me, is like, you don't have to care equally about all the things. You get to
I would argue that you can't care equally.
No, you can't. And it's much more fun and a lot more freeing to have a few big rocks and then have the other ones be like, yeah, sometimes I do it this way, sometimes I do it this way. It's not a hill I'm going to die on, as we like to say. So yeah.
And Sarah, to your point earlier about like, how do you have conversations with other people with, so that they don't, how can you share about what you're doing or do what you're doing in front of people without them starting to feel judged, you know, or like, I think that when you, there's a quiet confidence that comes from putting the big rocks in and deciding what's important to you and then just living your life and filling your time, that really resonates with people. And I am guessing that the more confident I've become as a mom, the more confident I've helped other moms feel, even if they do things completely differently from me, they would probably never know. Or even if they did know, it wouldn't be a thing, because it would be so like, it's a non-issue. It's just like, yeah, that's what I do. Or even I don't even have to say it. It just is what I do. It doesn't need to be commented on. And sometimes the less we have to comment on everything, the better. So it's not easy to get to that stage, especially when you're in the part where you're so immersed in what you're doing, and because it's like new and important and you're not sure of yourself, but like working toward getting to that point where it's just casual. It just is. It doesn't have to be a thing all the time. I think that that comes out in ways you probably don't even know and helps other people feel comfortable too. So the more you can radiate that, I think the better, like you're helping other moms.
You are.
Really.
You're creating a great parenting culture. And I believe that's out there. I think there is mom judging and mom shaming out there, but I also really do believe there's some of this good stuff out there too. And I think our listeners are the ones that are helping create that. Okay, so before we wrap up, this is kind of exciting. So we have partnered with PRX and Gen Z Media to tell you guys about a great new podcast, wait for it, for kids.
Oh my gosh.
So my kids love podcasts and it's summertime. And so to me, podcasts and audiobooks are kind of like the anti-screen time. Like, no, you can't watch TV, but if you need to chill out, here's some headphones. So this podcast is called Pants on Fire, and it's a great concept. So it's a nonfiction podcast, and it brings on two quote unquote experts, one real expert on a topic like pizza or sharks or space travel, they're both adults. They bring them on. One is a real expert and one is totally full of baloney. Now, my kid, this is like a perfect for my kid's age range, because kids need to know, kids need to have critical thinking about the what they're hearing. But this turns it into almost like game show fun. Like, can you spot the baloney? Which I think is actually like a really seriously great skill for kids to have in our current
environment. Absolutely.
But totally fun, and fun for the whole family. So they learn about topics while having fun kind of playing along and trying to figure out if they can spot the fake. So there are new episodes every Thursday, and where you find this podcast is bestrobotever.com. The podcast is called Pants on Fire, and again, it's from PRX and our friends at Gen Z Media. So go check that out. If your kids are home and bored, put on Pants on Fire and you'll have a lot of fun. All right. So Megan, we're going to cue it up for our listeners to go listen to another of our shows. We like to end the show this way, so you can scroll right down and keep listening to the Mom Hour. And I picked episode 62 from August of 2016, so almost 2 years ago, and it's called Things We Shouldn't Have Freaked Out About, Starting School Edition. I think we should revisit that series. So we did it.
Well, I was going to say this is probably one of our more popular series, right?
It is.
Things We Shouldn't Have Freaked Out About.
Yeah. And like basically our entire podcast is Things We Shouldn't Have Freaked Out About, because we have the benefit of hindsight. But Things We Shouldn't Have Freaked Out About is where you and I go back and forth about things we took super seriously way back in the day that we now realize aren't a big deal. And the Starting School Edition is specifically for you guys out there who are have a preschooler starting for the first time, or maybe are transitioning to kinder, or even a school change. I mean, starting a new school year, if you're making any kind of a change, brings up some of these things. But I would say
choosing a school.
Yeah. So especially if you have an entering a rising preschooler or a rising kinder. And I know
they're so weird about that term,
it's
but
real weird. It doesn't make sense. Then this is my pick for you guys. So again, it's from August of 2016. Just scroll back in your podcast app and look for episode 62. It's called Things We Shouldn't Have Freaked Out About, Starting School Edition. And I know it feels a little early, but if you're a worrier, then you're already worried about the first week of school and like, you know, what the list that they've sent home about the change of clothes and if your kid's going to be potty trained in time. And so I know, I see you, I hear you, I feel you. So I don't think it's too early for us to help back you off of that ledge. So go check that out. And then, stay around because Katie's up next with me and we will talk to you guys soon.
Bye.
Hey guys, it's Sarah again, and I am here with Katie Addis. Hey, Katie.
Hi, Sarah.
So Katie joins me once a month to give us a little peek into her life as a mom of two little ones. So she has a 3.5-year-old and, gosh, an almost 2-year-old at this point.
Oh, my goodness. Yes.
Crazy.
So crazy.
Yeah. So we always do something that's going really well, something that's maybe a struggle, and then a little tip or hack or discovery. So, Katie, what do we have today?
Okay, so today we are talking about Luke's skin, his little poor patchy skin. So he has eczema in very small areas.
Okay.
But it is chronic.
Yeah.
And now going on almost 2 years, we thought that, once he reached a certain milestone, physically, it wouldn't be as straining on his skin because, for example, like where he gets it is on the back of his leg, kind of above his kind of hamstring area, and then on the side of his ankle. So if you think about a crawling baby and where those skin folds are, it's basically that back of the leg skin fold. And so we always figured, oh, well, once he's up walking around, he's going to alleviate that stress on that skin area. But, to no avail, nothing has helped. Basically, we treat it topically with the medical grade hydrocortisone cream. Yep, so it's like that 2.5%.
I've had that before.
And I'm kind of the point where I'm just sick of when it flares up, I'm just sick of medicating it topically. I just think there has to be a different source of this allergy or something.
Yeah.
Like I think it might be allergies.
Yeah.
I have brought up allergy testing to his pediatrician before, and she kind of dismisses that as an option and really pushes just for topical treatment.
Interesting.
Yeah. And I think it's always been, I think, because of his age, though, because I think either it's harder to determine allergies in a younger baby, and or allergies come and go.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah.
In under two or something. I did hear something about that. Like once they turn two, allergies are more definitive. Have you heard something like
that? Yeah, I feel like, and I'm not really a huge expert on allergies and kids. I do know seasonal allergies like hay fever types. They say they don't even really develop until they're between 3 and 5. And that I have heard from more than one person. It's not that your kid might not be having an allergic reaction if they're sniffling or the wind is blowing or the weather changing, but like true seasonal allergies, like if you're like a hay fever spring allergy sufferer,
right,
that doesn't typically develop till later. So I would believe that things are in flux with babies and toddlers.
Mm-hmm.
We've dealt with eczema, but on a more mild scale, and everybody grew out of it in the toddler years, I would say. You do hear that it can be food related though, right? Like I'm not an expert, but like definitely probably worth pursuing.
Right. So I'm just thinking one of the big culprits that other kids suffer from, like maybe it's gluten, maybe it's dairy.
Yeah.
And I don't know, maybe I should just enjoy the months leading up to this final. Right.
Like you might actually be just wishing for hydrocortisone 2.5%.
Exactly.
If you were facing, I know that you're going to hear from listeners on this. So if you guys have severe eczema sufferers and or kids whose dietary allergies have led to skin issues, I know that we have people like that. So maybe you'll get a flood of emails with tips.
Yeah, that'd be great.
Is it worse seasonally? Is it?
No, it's just kind of always chronic. There's not one trigger that we can pinpoint environmentally. Yeah. I mean, and then that one second patch that I mentioned is down by his ankle. And that's where every shoe basically rubs.
Yeah.
And so it's pretty unavoidable.
Yeah. Maybe this summer being a toddler running around, can you wear sandals or like less shoey shoes?
Okay, I have this terrible reaction to this comment here because sandals and I don't know, under 2 year olds, like flip flop sandals with the little ankle backstrap. Did you ever use those?
Not really.
Because they don't work, right? Like the ankle strap just comes off their heel.
I had some toddlers who would wear those, but they were probably more like 2.5 before I put them in those little flip flops. And I always feel like it's a fall risk too. Like little kids in flip flops does make me nervous.
I mean, they're adorable and but I just feel like they just don't work.
Yeah.
And they'll fall off his foot.
Yeah. Yeah.
So there's really not an option. It's either topical treatment or get to the bottom of what's causing
it. Keep us posted.
Okay. So let's see. Moving on to okay. I'm excited about this one. This is a discovery and moms, hopefully it'll inspire some make ahead meals for you or your kids. So I'm excited, Sarah, to hear your reaction to this. Do you like tuna?
No. I like ahi tuna. I like sushi tuna.
Okay.
But I do not like canned tuna.
What about fish tacos?
I like fish tacos. And I like all other fish.
Okay. So this is a fish taco sauce.
Okay.
That I parlayed into a tuna
salad.
Yeah.
I mean, and my husband likes tuna salad. Like I don't eat it, but I keep going.
Okay.
I'm with you.
Okay. So
I like all other seafood.
So maybe use this fish taco sauce as a gateway, you know, get on board with this fish taco sauce. It is amazing. Literally, I've made many fish taco sauces before. This is the one I think I have landed on that I will keep forever. It's got, so you blend everything, all the ingredients in a food processor, and it's heavy on the cilantro.
I love cilantro.
You have some jalapeno in there.
Yep.
And then just a little bit of cumin.
Okay.
I actually cut the amount of cumin that the recipe, I always kind of cut cumin because it's so strong.
Right.
But.
And then is it mayo based?
So it's half mayo, half Greek yogurt.
Yep.
I didn't have Greek yogurt one time I made it. So I used sour cream. That was great. Greek yogurt, of course, is a little bit healthier and you have the added health benefit of the probiotic and stuff. So good. So I had so much of the sauce though. Mm-hmm. And so that's how it ended up getting parlayed into the tuna. I do think with tuna, if you're a little skeptical or like could take it or leave it, I think if you buy higher quality canned tuna, it's less fishy and less.
I would believe that. I would think at this point, it's almost like a mental thing with me. Like,
yeah.
But I do like chicken salad. I do like you know, I could see like using that type of a sauce on a bunch of different things.
Yeah, I would love if any listeners out there are interested in this sauce, but try it on chicken salad. I'd love to know. Yeah. Tag us on social media.
I would love that. Did you get the recipe somewhere? Is this something we can link up?
Or
Okay.
So we'll link up the recipe and then we'll throw in the modifications that I did in terms of quantity and then cutting on some of the
So that will all be at themomhour.com, you guys, in the show notes for this episode. And if I forget, just yell at me in the comments. That happens. Quite, especially with our segment, because I sometimes we record separately, and so I forget, and then if I forget to ask you, so it will be there, guys. If you're the first one there and it's not there, you get the privilege of reminding me.
It's my homework too, Sarah. Okay, so my last thing is a success that I've had with just memorabilia management.
I like that term.
Yes, and for kids specifically. So I am big into memorabilia. I actually used to do quite a bit of scrapbooking and crafting, and that's fallen to the wayside a little bit with kids. I've been doing other things. But I do feel proud about the way that I have managed their stuff. Mm-hmm. So basically I have a big Sterilite tub.
Yep.
And this is after doing lots of research of what sort of tub I wanted. I knew I wanted it to be waterproof.
Okay.
I knew that I wanted it to stand the distance of, you know, stand the test of time. So I want this to take them from K to 12, essentially. I've just, you know, the paperwork stuff that you want to keep.
Yep.
And so this particular size, I think it's all about the size and, you know, those qualities like waterproof and blah, blah, blah. So this can accommodate both letter and legal size, depending on which way you flip the orientation of the file. And basically what I've done for each kid for every year, is starting with, well, they have one folder per calendar year. And then once they start preschool, they have an additional file for that
the school year.
Yeah. For the school year. Exactly. So calendar year, school year, going all the way up. And I did just a batch. A batch box. So like all the years are there because I know it would be so like me to have, you know, one yellow folder and then
it's next nice to year, have it all look the same.
And, exactly. Yeah, I love the uniformity. So, so their boxes are taken care of. And the one thing that actually listeners, if you too are into memorabilia management, do you have a tub out there that also has a handle that
would be nice.
That also can accommodate.
I feel like we also need a picture of yours.
I
mean, I can picture it. And I think just for comparison's sake, since my kids are older, I have these accordion folders that they sell for this purpose. Okay. I'll show you on your way out.
Okay.
Katie's at my house and they're in the garage. And my oldest will finish fourth grade this year. And I would say they are mostly holding up. What I like about them is they're really big. So like the preschool projects that are like awkwardly sized or like oversized, it's no problem.
The
jury's still out on whether the accordion is truly going to stretch to accommodate, I guess this one, I'm trying to think if this is meant to go up through 12th grade or maybe like sixth. Either way, you can carry them by a handle, but they are not waterproof. So this would just be different. It's not like better or worse, but I'll show them to you. And I do like them for larger art projects. And I will say that the like preschool and kinder and first years tend to be like the thickest because the stuff they're bringing home sometimes has like macaroni on it or like tissue paper balls. And it has accommodated those. I think it gets thinner as they get older, which is not a bad thing. I think, you know, I think this thing will stretch and it will work. But Allegra's is getting fat.
So falling. Stretch in terms of.
So it's like an accordion on the side. So if you picture like an accordion file folder, but it's giant. I'm using my hands right now.
Okay.
It's like really big.
Okay.
So listeners, since you can't see us, I'll post a link to those. And I've talked about them, I think, in another episode of this podcast. And then Katie will post a picture of hers.
Do you ruthlessly filter?
Yeah. So what I usually do is when the stuff comes home at the end of the year from school or maybe the end of the semester. So I have a file folder on my desk in the kitchen that's pretty small. So if there's a one-off piece I want to save, it goes in there under their name. But then the final resting place is in this big folder, which lives in the garage. And then at the end of the year, I'm pretty ruthless. Like, I mean, I get rid of a lot. I usually kind of let it sit on the counter for a couple weeks while I don't deal with it. And then by the time I'm ready to deal with it, I'm in that purging mode.
Yeah.
And the other thing I'll do is once a year or so, I'll go through the past years. And even then I might purge a little bit more because I might realize like, okay, with the hindsight of 2 years, there's a lot that's similar. You know, maybe it's like, I love their early writing, like in kindergarten and first and even second grade, their little pieces of writing. But then you start to realize like, okay, well, there's several in here that are similar. So I'm going to pare down. So I definitely edit. And it's satisfying to edit because then what you're left with is really memorable.
Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah. And that's only for the paper memorabilia. A different episode, we can talk about other big objects like first birthday hat.
Yeah. You know what I mean? I do have like a couple bins. Like people who go in my garage make fun of me because one just says baby stuff, sentimental, don't lose or something.
It's not
organized.
Yeah.
But I feel like I know where it is and it's in one place. And yeah, I have like the hats they wore home from the hospital and
All that stuff.
But it's not overly organized. But I know where it is and it's safe. That's all that matters. Thing. And it's all in one, I would say two bins. There's one in the garage and then there's one in our youngest's bedroom, which was, you know, the baby room. There's no more babies, but it's like multiple baby items in a bin in Violet's closet. So I feel decent about that. I don't feel it's like an A+ game.
Well, this is not to put stress on any of the listeners.
No, I would love to hear how people, I mean, I think for some people truly enjoy this, enjoy the organizational aspect of it, which
and
is
that's
awesome.
Me. Yeah.
But if you don't, I think that's fine. If you have a way, I'm pretty sure Megan just has like literally a bin for each kid. And it's not even, I'm not throwing her under the bus, but I want to say it's not even organized by year. It's just like, this is Jacob's bin. Let's look through it. Let's see all these art projects. Most of them probably have the date on them anyway, you know?
Yeah.
So I don't think there's one right way. I think if you like to geek out over the organizational aspect, then that's fun. But if you don't, it's fine.
Yeah.
It's all going to be okay. All right, Katie, should we wrap up?
Yep. Sounds good.
Okay. So we'll be back in a month or so with Katie and head to themomhour.com because we did actually mention some things we'll link up there. So just head to the show notes for this episode and you will find what you're looking for. Thanks,
all right.
Katie.
Bye, guys.